Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David.
Big day in oil country. Bruce, two trades. Two trades that see marginal players going out and probably marginal players coming in. But, Bruce, I can't say that I personally, I know a lot of people, man, there's a lot of hatred for Chiarelli on the internet. Ooh, it is nasty out there for one Peter Chiarelli. And not just with the usual suspects. I mean, you got mainstream media people attacking him, which is pretty unusual for the standing GM for that ever to happen, I have to say.
Yeah.
But I saw some comments. I saw a tweet from Jason Gregor, and there might have been others. There's been lots of fairly oblique criticism by Jim Matheson, Ryan Rashog, and is that your dog?
Yeah.
Or your cat? It's
Fel.
Fel. And so anyway, so there's no love for Chiarelli. I'm just looking at this as a fan who has been watching the games. And as I said in our podcast last night, Bruce, there's about six players who I have seen enough of in an Oilers sweater I never wanted to see again.
Mm-hmm.
And Bruce, they got rid of half of them today.
The very next day.
So that to me is a good day. I'm sorry. That's a good day.
I hear you. I mean, I got to wonder. I mean, last night you were talking about who they should get rid of, and you were saying they should put the three big centers all down the middle running their own line. And today in practice, Hitchcock had the three big centers each running their own line. And then this afternoon, Chiarelli moved out three of those guys that you wanted to see the last of. So maybe we have extra secret listeners to the Cult of Hockey podcast, I'm starting to think.
That is the power of the press, Bruce. Never let it be said that our power is fading. It's the power of the podcast, I think. Mm-hmm. Everyone's into this new podcast thing, so they're just getting, you know, they're just going along with it. But I didn't listen
to our Bench Lucic podcast, though, I notice.
No, they have not Bench Lucic. That would be, let's face it, and you know this to be true, that would be a really radical move. And I think it's coming. Mm-hmm. I think it's inevitable because I don't see Lucic improving. But, I mean, as long as he played 6 minutes a game, I probably wouldn't say anything. But when I look at Milan Lucic's, let me just go here and see how many even strength. Let's see who's played the most minutes of any Oilers winger this year, Bruce. And we see at number one, Milan Lucic,
yep.
444. And then their second worst winger this year, or their worst winger this year, Drake Caggiula at 371. So the two worst wingers, Chiasson was at 398 and Cassian 391. So they're both ahead of Caggiula. But Caggiula's in the top four. So the worst wingers played the most, arguably the worst. Maybe this Caggiula might have been the worst, in my opinion. And he played the fourth most. So that's not exactly great time management or roster assemblage when you have such weak players getting that much time on the wing. The Oilers' current place in the standings right now and their troubles right now. So let's deal with the trades in order, Bruce. First thing we had, Chris Weidman and a third-round draft pick going out for Alex Petrovic. I think that's Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, former Red Deer teammate.
Yes.
From Florida coming in. A big right-handed defenseman, probably in the Keith Ollie mode, or the maybe if we're lucky in the Andy Sutton mode. But what's your take on that trade?
Well, I mean, they did throw in the third-round pick, right? So
yes.
Presumably it's supposed to be an upgrade for the Oilers. They traded out a $1 million a season cap hit in Chris Weidman for a $1.95 million cap hit in Alex Petrovic. So that sounds like it should be an upgrade also, right? You're getting a $2 million guy in. Well, but if you look at what Alex Petrovic actually did in Florida this year, it was spend quite a lot of time in the press box as a seventh defenseman, healthy scratch. He sat out 11 games out of Florida's first 37, I think it was, that he spent time in the press box. Not too different from Chris Weidman, who spent, I think, 11 games in the press box just in his brief time as an Oiler. But when you're paying more, and especially when you're throwing in a third-round draft choice, you'd like to think, well, you're not going to get a top-four NHL defenseman, but you better be getting a top-six NHL defenseman. And so far this year, that wasn't Alek Petrovic playing on Florida Panthers, who are behind Edmonton Oilers in the standings. So it's not like it's on some powerhouse team and he can't get a game in. It's, anyway, I like Petrovic. I watched him for a number of years. I tracked the Nuge extensively during his draft season, you might recall. I've got family in Red Deer, and I took the advantage of to take in a bunch of games and watch Nuge. And you couldn't help but see Petrovic. He'd been drafted in the second round the year before, so he was kind of an emerging, already drafted best defenseman on the team, on a pretty good Red Deer Rebels team that won the Central Division that year. And he's a big, strapping, kind of rangy guy, really likes to get in the opponent's face. If you look at his PIM totals, it's almost 1.5 per game over his career. He's leading Florida in hits by 30 hits over anybody else on the team. This despite the fact he's missed almost a third of their games. So, I mean, clearly he's a guy who brings the physical side of things. 6'4", 216 pounds, 26 years old. I mean, there's a lot to like in that package. And, you know, you're always hoping when you get that 26-year-old guy that you're getting Jason Smith that just hasn't quite emerged yet, and he's just waiting for that right change of scenery to come out. But Petrovic, by the stats, has been, unfortunately, going backwards. And this year he only has, is it one assist in 26 games?
Yes, and the immortal Bogdan Kiselevich and the fellow immortal Mackenzie Weegar were both playing ahead. Two players I had not heard of until this very moment, looking at Florida's roster. Never heard of those guys, either of them, were playing, getting games ahead of Alexander Petrovic. Bruce, I think this trade...
One assist, minus eight.
Yeah, one assist and minus eight. So not exactly promising. This trade, to me, has Ken Hitchcock's fingers all over it on a certain level. I think he was tired of those players as I was. Mm-hmm. And last night, San Jose cycling the Oilers to death, dominating. It was one of those games. It was a game straight out of 2013-14 cycle. And it was clear, at least in the short term, they need a big defenseman back there who can help with that. Because... Mm-hmm. You know, I'm surprised Benning has survived this purge. But,
I'm not sure that he has. Weidman, I'm not sure he's in the top six tomorrow night, are you?
Yeah, I'm not sure that he has either. I don't think he has. I don't think he has. He shouldn't be in the top six. And I think Petrovic is going to come in there, and he's going to help with what Hitchcock saw was, man, we are getting run around in our own zone right now, and we've got to stop this. We've got to figure out a way to stop this. And I don't think he's looking. Of course, the Oilers also need to move the puck. They just need better defensemen, and I don't know if they got that today in Petrovic or Manning, but I can certainly see why they're making the effort, because with Klefbom and Russell out, they are hopeless back there. And third round picks are pretty, you know, as NHL trades go, maybe at this time of year you end up paying a bit more. I think when you move early, I think you pay a bit more. If you wait towards the trade deadline, you pay a little less. A fairly hefty price for him, but I mean, not exactly a killer price either. I mean, a third round pick. What's the odds of a third round pick playing 200 NHL games? One in six.
He's kind of playing with house money on this one, Chiarelli, in the sense that he acquired an extra third round pick in the Brandon Davidson to New York Islanders trade at the deadline last year. And Davidson, the Islanders wind up not even qualifying him, and he wound up going to Chicago. And we'll talk more about Davidson in a minute, I suspect. But they got that third round pick for a guy that he picked off a waiver. So it was kind of a bonus. Like he kind of worked some alchemy to pick a waiver claim, turn it into a third round pick. Well, now he's turned that third round pick, or the other one, and they're going to be close, into Alek Petrovic. And he also traded a sixth-round pick to get Chris Weidman. So you could say they gave up a third and a sixth to get 3 months of Alek Petrovic. And Petrovic, I mean, his name's been around for a while. I know I frequent the Low Tide blog comments section, and they've been talking about Petrovic for years as a guy that, you know, in Florida they had Pizik, they had Petrovic, they had all these righty, of course, Ekblad. So they had all these righty defensemen and no quite place to put them all was to take that maybe you could get potentially a number four defenseman for a little cheaper. Now, I personally don't see Petrovic as a number four anymore, but I do think he's going to play in the top six. I think he's going to be more in the regular rotation here than he was in Florida for whatever reason. I mean, we don't have a Mackenzie Weegar on our team, right? So he's...
Bohdan Kislevich. Maybe those are good.
We don't have him either. I can't tell you a whole lot about either guy. But anyway... whatever reason, Petrovic had worn out his welcome there. Oh, and he is a guy who maybe the change of scenery will revitalize him a little bit, and we have to sincerely hope that that's the case. And that trade, at least I see the logic of that trade. The other one, well, we'll talk about that in a minute, I suspect.
Weidman was not... his first shift, he gives up a goal. He just struggled. And I could see where the coach was not going to play him again. Like, he just would have had enough. And they needed to make these moves. So I can't, I was on the fence, for instance, with the Strome and Spooner trade, because Strome wasn't killing it here. And I didn't know enough about Spooner to say something. Now I do. And it looks like a bad trade. I'm willing to say that now, but I can't. I just think it's hard for anyone to comment on these trades unless they've been watching Petrovic and Manning closely, which is kind of hard to do because they've been in the press box. So I'm going to wait before I say the trade was good or bad. Then I'll have a little bit more information. The Weidman, though, he was not going to play here. They were going to waive him. He couldn't play on Hitchcock's team. Hitchcock wasn't going to have that kind of player. So certainly don't mind him being moved. Let's move on to the second trade then.
I watched Weidman yesterday in his last game as an Oiler, his fifth and last game as an Oiler. And he was overwhelmed out there. He couldn't handle the heavy hockey in the corners. He took two penalties. After one of them, he came out of the box, and so he had to line up as a forward with the four penalty killers as they couldn't clear the zone. We talked about this at some length last night, so I won't again here. But he had a 73-second shift after his penalty, and they never did clear the zone. Eventually, Talbot froze the puck. And, they just weren't able to break the cycle.
And let's face it, in terms of a left shot puck mover, or was he right shot, Weidman?
He's right shot, Weidman, yeah.
Okay, in terms of a back end, like a third pairing puck mover then, mm-hmm. Caleb Jones came in and has earned that spot. He made Weidman redundant here. If Caleb Jones had totally flopped, maybe they'd be thinking, we still need someone who can move the puck, but they have Caleb Jones. They don't need that guy anymore, so it made perfect sense to get rid of Weidman.
Well, yeah.
Well, now...
You need more than one guy that can move the puck, and I don't think we necessarily added any today.
Well, that's it. Is Petrovic going to be a player or not? And that's what I'm saying. I don't have the answer, and I'm not going to say, and I don't know. Okay, the second trade, Kajula, for Kajula and Garrison, which was a salary dump for Brandon Manning. And what's his name? The other guy, Noel?
Yeah, the other guy is just a contract to balance out the number of contracts.
I see.
He's like that Zach Pucciro that we got in the Yakupov trade, right? They're going to stash him in probably the ECHL and just so that there's no changes to the 50-man list, and he's just a disposable contract.
Okay. All right, you don't like this trade so much, right?
I don't.
What are you thinking?
Well, I'm thinking they moved out the Kajula contract they signed this summer, 2 years, $1.5 million, that many have said from the day one really was an overpay for where he was in his career. And that may well be so. But in return, they brought in a guy that was signed last summer to a 2-year extension, $2.25 million. So $750,000 more than Kajula is Manning. And that's on the cap this year and next year. He's got 2 years to run. And Chicago couldn't wait to get away from that contract. Apparently, Kurt Levins, our colleague, in his post about the trade, he cited some Chicago source,
Mark Lazarus.
Stan Bowman fixed his biggest mistake last summer by foisting it off on the Edmonton Oilers, who can't seem to get enough of other people's big mistakes. I mean, you mentioned Ryan Spooner earlier, another 2-year contract signed last summer that the Oilers are now on the hook for through next year, or they have to buy it out this summer. So, when you have that extra year, it really gives you some misgivings if the other team has given up on the guy. But Brandon Manning, my goodness, his numbers. Chicago, somebody had it up on Twitter. I won't have it exactly right, but they press boxed him on December 12th. He hasn't played a game since December 12th. And since he went out, Chicago won 5 straight games. And before he went out, they were just getting killed. They were 7-17, and they had and plus other losses. And Manning himself was on the ice for 9 goals for and 26 against. Alex Petrovich was on the ice for 8 goals for and 18 against. Like, we're talking two guys that were absolutely bleeding goals against and not generating much in the way of offense at the other end. And Brandon Manning, here's his page from RotoWire. You know RotoWire, a very good source of sort of fantasy information, but it's just information generally. And here's one when he got press boxed back in October. The struggling blue liner, this is like 3 weeks after the beginning of the first year of his 2-year contract that Chicago signed him to in the summer. The struggling blue liner will give way to Brandon Davidson, who will make his season debut alongside Jan Ruta in the Hawks' third defensive pairing. No players mentioned in this post have any fantasy value. So that's one. And then there was one, he got back in the lineup for a while, and then here's another one in December, and he hasn't been back since. Manning is making room for Erik Gustafsson, who is ready to return from an illness. Manning has a goal and 3 points in 27 contests. So he's got like 3 times as many points as Petrovich, so I guess that's good, 3-1. But he's just been bleeding. He's just been bleeding goals against, and Chicago's been healthy scratching him. And who are they giving the ice time to? Those former Oilers, Brandon Davidson, and that former Oiler draft pick, Erik Gustafsson.
The Oilers should have signed him this summer, as I was saying, because Brandon Davidson, pairing hockey player, they should have signed him. I don't know why they didn't sign him. It was a mistake. And so it was a guy with bad PO, at least he can goals against. It sounds like, you know, it's a way of saying, they're buying low. Isn't that what you're supposed to do?
Yeah. Well, he's just getting crushed. his shot.
I don't know Manning either. I'm not gonna. You know shots what? I'm not gonna say anything about Manning either.
44%, and his scoring chance percentage is 43%, and his high danger is 41%, and his goals percentage is 26%. Like, but, you know, well, it's just, yeah.
Yeah, good. We're buying low. It's going to be a much better
player. We're buying low. And then there's the factor of him and Connor McDavid and their history. But
yeah, I don't buy that. I do. Listen, if Brandon Manning can come in here, there's a win. He'll be McDavid. These players they're battling all the time on the ice. I just think this is someone raised, like, yeah, what about Zach? When Zach Cassian, people who were had their noses out of joint and were about that. That Cassian quickly became a beloved Edmonton Oiler. And in matter and help this team win and play well, he will be beloved on his team. And now I just think in terms of factors of rating this trade, that was the one that I just like, come on. You're seriously grasping for things to sticks to beat up on Chiarelli with. Now I can't say if this is a good trade or not.
Mm-hmm.
Who they're getting rid of here.
No, I got that.
Drake Kajula has been the Oilers' worst defensive winger the last 2 years. And we track scoring chances here. We're looking at major mistakes on scoring chances against. 2 years running, Drake Kajula has made the most. And this year, it's significantly. If a winger is doing his job, so Ty Ratty, let's compare him to Ty Ratty. Ty Ratty he's made 20 contributions, major contributions to grade A chances. He's made 6 mistakes on grade A chances, 6 major mistakes on grade A chances against. So that's 24-6 against. Kajula Bruce is 23-4 and 21.
Wow.
He's barely a winger. That is completely unacceptable. Lucic is 26 and 20. Again, completely unacceptable. When you're a winger, you don't have that much defensive responsibility. For you to be allowing players into the slot, that's just blatant failures of back-checking and blatant flybys and mistakes. That kind of rate of making mistakes. Hitchcock, after that play last night, on that where Kajula came charging in there like a maniac on that pinch and completely missed the guy leading to a 3-on-1, you can't have that at the NHL level. That's peewee hockey stuff. And it wasn't just once. It was repeated. It was the highest rate, 2 years running. And I just think Hitchcock saying this. Again, I see this as a Hitchcock trait. Saying he said about 3 games ago, Bruce, we're seeing who can help and who can't. He made a list of who can't, and he gave it to the GM, and he's moving those guys. That's my take. And Kajula was high on that list. He had to go. And maybe they had to eat some salary. Maybe this is a bad trade because Manning can't play. Manning's going to be even worse. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you that. But Kajula had to go.
Yeah, well, I mean, they got him out of there. I mean, that play yesterday, it reminded me of that old joke about the coach going up to the player and telling him, bad news, there's a bus leaving for Bakersfield tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. Be under it.
Yes, that was Ken Hitchcock to Drake Kajula in the dressing room.
Yeah, anyway, it was.
And there's no shortage of wingers who can, like, you know, they could play. They could bring up Cooper Marody from the farm team, honestly. Well, and they brought up
Joe Gambardella.
They brought up Joe Gambardella. He's a few years old, a year or two older than Kajula, but he's not going to be. I suspect he's not going to be. Gambardella has the rap in the AHL of being a good two-way hockey player. I think he kills penalties down there. He's finally scoring close to a point a game. He has in the last month. His game, you know, he's an older guy, but he's not going to be any worse than Drake Kajula, and he's going to be a heck of a lot cheaper. And Kajula had another year on his deal as well. So, good luck to Drake Kajula. We all had high hopes for him. Heading into this year, I had high hopes. But we're seeing less on the attack, more problems on defense. He just regressed as a hockey player. I don't know why. But he became the David Oliver of 2018. Remember David Oliver? This happens with wingers. They come in, they look good for a little bit, and it's like, oh, geez. And they move along, and they got rid of Kajula's contract for next year. And
yeah, but they, you know, they didn't get rid of it. They just, because they got a contract for next year that's more money. So they're actually coming out there with a net loss. And you know what? I did the math of this weekend's multiple moves. Starting with the one that I panned the other day of the departure of Valentin Zhikov, who they let go on waivers. And they replaced him with Yamamoto. So that was a net loss on this payroll of almost $250,000. Then they traded Weidman for Garrison. That was a net loss of almost $1 million on the payroll. Manning for Kajula, we'll cross here because of the contracts. Manning for Kajula is $750,000 more, and Gambardella for Garrison is $75,000 more. So in the end, the Oilers cap, salary cap, with these four players in, four players out, the salary cap has gone up by exactly $2.019 million. So I think it's a New Year's trick, parlor trick by Chiarelli to add $2,019,000 to the
you would notice that, Chris. That's a kind of Chris McCurdy thing.
But yeah, $5.8 million in, $3.8 million out. Call it $2 million. And I mean, they're tight to the cap. There's a lot of stuff we don't know. At least I don't pretend to know about how the long-term injury reserve with Sekera works and so on. But whatever little bit of space they had to play with, well, they just used up a whole bunch of it.
Presumably, Bruce, this is as good as they could do. Like, I mean, you might say, well, there's like the, you know, there's the people who hate Chiarelli. And to be clear, if Chiarelli was fired, wouldn't say like, oh, that was a bad idea. I would say, yeah, okay, let's move on. No, I forgot my point, but presumably this Chiarelli's looking for trades and looking for who's available and looking for what's being asked. And, you know, they had a bit of cap space, and this is how he's used it. Hopefully, one would hope. that the brain trust, you know, including Keith Gretzky, who some people want to be the next GM, it made the best possible deal here. Like this was, you know, I guess this is the criticism of Shirelli that he never does that. Could be, and there's some evidence, you know, obviously there's some evidence here, which is why I'm mainly upset about the Lucic signing. I mean, that's to me, and the Reinhardt trade, those two things combined, I think, are enough to fire the guy. But he's made some decent smaller trades and some weaker smaller trades. But I just I'm not negative on these trades. I mean, they had to get rid of these players. Now maybe Manning's going to come in, but does Manning even have a spot? I mean,
well, he's got a 2-year contract of $4.5 million total. I mean, there better be a bloody spot.
Well, let's look at like right now.
Like I'm penciling him in on the third pairing with Petrovic.
I don't see him playing ahead of Jones, Caleb Jones. Like I see Hitchcock.
Benning's likely the odd man out in the very short term.
Yeah. So is Russell back tomorrow night? Do we know yet?
We don't know yet, and I suspect from what I'm seeing today, he may yet still not be ready because.
Well, this is it. Like maybe it's going to be another 2 weeks with Chris Russell all of a sudden. They've got to survive these 2 weeks, Bruce. Yeah. I mean, they've got to. So they've got to try.
You could also make the argument, David, that if they're going to trade for extra defensemen, why weren't they doing this 2 weeks ago as opposed to now? I mean, Clef
kind of like the Montoya. Gone. We got Clef Montoya today.
A month after the fact, they went out and got a backup goalie, you know. And now we've got, you know, Clefbaum and Russell went out on December 13th, I think it was, 11th, December 11th, almost 3 weeks ago. And only now, after they've lost 5 straight games and bled 25 goals in those games, have they suddenly decided, well, maybe we better go out and make an emergency trade for a defenseman. Oh, yeah, let's go and do it again and get another 7th defenseman off of some other team. And you see, this is, like, I look at the, like, not just the individual trades, and I don't mind the Petrovic trade individually. I think I pronounced his name 6 different ways now.
Yeah.
The Manning trade, I really don't like. But what I look at is that extra $2 million in cap hit, the loss of the third round draft pick, the loss of 2 players off of Bakersfield, because Bakersfield now has lost Gambardello and Yamamoto in the last 2 days, and they got nobody back because Kajula went to another organization and Zikov went to another organization. So they're just down to what were 2 good forwards for Bakersfield. Well, they're now here in Edmonton. There's not much less depth of guys to call on. And I guess that's attrition. But to me, that's a price they've paid. When you add up the $2 million, the third round pick, the 2 young forwards out of development time out of Bakersfield and weakening that team, that's a heavy price to pay for 2 guys that between them spent 25 games in the press box, healthy scratched by teams below Edmonton in the standings. So, and they're getting, and between them, the 2 guys have got 4 points and they're like minus $1 million. So they're coming in here. I'm certainly prepared. I'm even going to bite the bullet and root for Brandon Manning and hopefully he's the answer, but I have a plenty of skepticism, and that's where I think I have to leave it on that score. And the price was heavy, and I'm beginning to wonder when they need to take the car keys away from the guy making the moves, to tell the truth.
Yeah. Person on Twitter was saying, you know, it would have been, they agreed with me, it was trying to move Kajula, but maybe if they could get it like any kind of draft pick for the guy. Mm-hmm. I wonder
if bigger liability in return in terms of the contract. Yeah. Well, the player, I won't call him a liability necessarily, but the numbers certainly point heavily in that direction. But the contract, exchange of contracts, was a net loss over and over again here.
Okay, so let's say this, Bruce, there's some rational reason for making the contract.
Okay.
What would be most likely? What would that be? Is it just my guess is the coach's two coaches, but this coach, like McClellan clearly liked Kajula, gave him every opportunity in the world to succeed. I think we got a coach in here who just said, no, like, forget it.
He's not getting it.
No. And that's the rational reason that I see, Bruce, because so they're dumping this contract when they can, and they had to eat one. And so they're eating one, and they're thinking, well, maybe – this, and you know, the way defensemen go down, we need to protect ourselves, and maybe this guy can help get us through this next month and a half. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the, and you know, the contracts, there is a difference in the contracts, obviously, but we'll just, we'll live with that in order to get rid of a player. In order to get rid of a player that the coach can't stand and that we as a management team are pretty iffy on as well. So that's, I see, that's to me, does that make sense as in terms of like a rational reason for the deal? Because there has to be one. They're not just making it because they want to make Oiler fans mad.
Putting the rash in rational. Anyway, they move pretty fast today, and they do have better cycle busting capability than they had yesterday. And of course, they lost some of that cycle busting capacity when they traded Eric Greiba or bought out Eric Greiba and added cap that way. Don't even get me started on Eric Greiba's buyout. But now they've replaced Eric Greiba at least, so I guess there's that upside.
They would have been better off just keeping Davidson and Greiba. Eh? Like they had equivalent players to Manning and Petrovic in Davidson and Greiba.
Petrovic's a cut above, I think, anybody on that list. But even that might be wishful thinking. And the guy who might really be a cut above is Erik Gustafsson, Chicago's leading scorer on defense, 8 goals, 13 assists, 21 points. The guy and never signed, and the guy that pushed Brandon Manning out of the lineup the last time. So there's a weird Oiler connections all over the place.
Now we're getting into really ancient grievances, Bruce, here.
Well, another good draft choice that the Oilers didn't follow through on. He's, you know, it happened over and over again. When they did make a decent draft pick in the middle rounds, they didn't recognize it, and they let the guy go, or they moved him, or, you know. Anyway, you're right about the ancient grievances. We should just keep them to the Peter Chiarelli era. But all these years of defeat kind of blend together over the longer term, you know, and the grievances just become this roiling sea of despair.
All right, so we got the three centers, Bruce. Let's end up with a little discussion about that, because I thought I did raise that last night, but I think Hitchcock had moved to that. I raised it because I think I saw Hitchcock move to that in the third period in the last few shifts. He'd done that. So that's why I raised it. And of course, the Oilers went on a big ripping winning streak for a while when they moved to that last year. Mm-hmm. And I don't mind it. I just think what you need to do is, because one of the Milan Lucic, Kyle Brodziak were the other two guys on my list.
Yeah.
And I just think they need to limit those guys to about 5 minutes a game, like seriously, except for Brodziak on the PK. Mm-hmm. They should be playing the Oilers should go with three lines right now. And they obviously have three centers who can carry those lines, and it's just a matter of finding wingers. And I like the Kujula trade also, because it's a recognition of, I think that Ty Ratty is a better player than Kujula, which I have believed since late last year, and glad that Ratty beat out. That's how I see it, as Ratty beating out Kujula for one of those spots. So if you have Ratty, Reeder, Puljujärvi, Yamamoto, Kara, and Cassian, I would go with those guys in your top six and just play the fourth line minimal minutes.
Well, today in practice, they had McDavid with Kara and Ratty. Draisaitl with Reeder and Yamamoto. Nugent Hopkins with Kujula, who of course subsequently got traded. So let's slot Ryan Spooner in there, or could be Gambardella, but let's say Spooner. And Jesse Puljujärvi. And then, of course, the flat line. And they've got... So how many of those wingers are proven top six NHL caliber winger, or even proven top nine? Shall we say Kara, Reeder, Spooner, Ratty, Yamamoto, Puljujärvi. And I've got Reeder and maybe Spooner as proven. And the other guys are young to sort of 25-year-old, hopefully emerging forwards in Kara and Ratty, and of course Yamamoto and Puljujärvi. But nobody that's really proven, and none of them was putting the freaking puck in the net. None of them. Kujula at least was doing a tiny bit of that, at least for a while.
Yeah, and I think he had some of the mainstream media guys were Kujula fans because of that. Like, you know, the obvious result, putting the puck in the net. And you know, I would say he was, and I give him credit. He has a nose. He can score some goals. And when he's hitting, he's a good player in the bottom six. He's just, if he could figure out how to defend, he could be an NHL player. Maybe he will figure out how to defend. Maybe this trade will wake him up and realize, geez, I got to do something here. That didn't work out. Because there's the potential there for an NHL player in Kujula. That's why we're all liked him for a while there. So yeah, not the best.
Anyway, those six wingers, and I'm counting Spooner and not the zero games played, Joe Gambardella. By my math, they have 8 goals on the season among the 6 of them.
Wow.
So you've got Chase, 3 centers.
But the one guy was producing, Chase. Yeah, the one guy producing, Chase, yeah, on is gone.
He was hurt, yeah. But so who are these 3 centers going to be passing to? You got to find 6 wingers for 3 centers. And there just ain't enough wingers to go around.
Indeed. I like Ty Ratty. I'm forever a Jesse Puljujärvi fan, although I can see it's going to be a while. Mm-hmm. Yamamoto, we'll see. He was, in the end, he had a rough start at Bakersfield, but was getting a point a game in his last 2 or 3 weeks. Jeter Kara looks like a top 9 winger right now. So it's probably not going to work out, but there's a chance.
Yeah, Kara is close. I'll give you that. But I mean, when I say the word proven, it's a short list. And I mean, Reeder and Spooner are not exactly tearing it up. And those are the guys that are the most experienced. And then, of course, you got Lucic, who pulls down whatever line he's been on.
I agree with you about the proven thing. I agree with your definition and your categorization of the players. There's only 2 guys who have ever played it in that role for any length of time and had some success. And they're not having it right now, Reeder and Spooner. This is the Kujula trade also gives Spooner a second shot here.
Potentially.
So we'll see what happens. I guess it wouldn't be a surprise to see Matt Benning traded, for instance.
No, I wouldn't.
With a pick maybe for a winger. And I'm not saying that the coach has had enough of Matt Benning, but it wouldn't surprise me if that's the case.
Yeah, Hogg, put me in the minority. Maybe it's not even that big of a minority of people that actually like Matt Benning and think that he can help the team in the right situation. But having him play out of his, punching out of his weight class is not the right situation. But as a third-pairing guy, he's good. He's tough. He will nail guys in open ice, which I, for one, appreciate. He can score a little bit, and he's been a plus player every year. Like, he's on for more goals by the Oilers than the other team. Like, this even strength, like honest plus, not some of this fake empty net goal stuff, because he's never on for those. And he is, he's a limited player, but guess what? On a 20-man team, you're not going to have 20 guys that are all superstars. You can't pay them all, for one thing. So
I don't mind him as a 6-7
D-man. Now they've got 3 more or 2 more $2 million guys that are in the same category, and they're going to be fighting for that ice time. I guess we'll see what happens. I mean, it's certainly going to stir things up, and hopefully the new guys will come in and sort of take command. They're both veterans, so there's that. The 2 new D-men have been around, and hopefully they won't come in and be any shrinking violet for more than a game or so.
Alrighty, let's leave it there, Bruce. And we'll be on tomorrow night, I guess, right?
After the Winnipeg game. Let's hope it's a game and not a debacle.
Thanks for talking, Bruce.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.